This is the Inclusion Interchange, a podcast from the University of Pittsburgh's Office for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. And here's the host of the Inclusion Interchange, Dr. Clyde Wilson Pickett.
Welcome to the Inclusion Interchange. I'm your host, Dr. Clyde Wilson Pickett, and I serve as Vice Chancellor for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion at the University of Pittsburgh. I'm also the university's Chief Diversity Officer. On the Inclusion Interchange, we have the opportunity to talk to people across the University of Pittsburgh who are having a positive impact on the fields of diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility. Today, it is my honor and privilege to welcome to our microphones Yvette Moore. She currently serves as the Director of Pitt Excel, an undergraduate diversity program here at the University of Pittsburgh. Throughout her career, Yvette has held a number of roles in higher education at various universities and has worked to support, affirm, and advance diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility. Certainly, it's an honor and privilege to have you with us. I think members in our community who know you know that our students and our community think incredibly highly of you. One of the reasons why I wanted to bring you here is to honor the work that you're doing and certainly give homage to it, but also the chance for you to tell your story. So this is a chance for us just to have some conversation, much like I promised, just a chance for us to be together. So thank you for being with us. Talk to me about how you got to the University of Pittsburgh.
Yes. Well, first of all, Clyde, I'm glad to be here. I got here, honestly, because I came here for loss of love. So I did not come to the University of Pittsburgh because it was something natural to me. I came here to bury my husband, who was from Pittsburgh, and I decided I was going to stay to make sure that my mother-in-law and my father-in-law were settled. And so I had promised him that before he passed away, that I would make sure that my family here was okay. So I left the institution I was at. They told me, like, take a year off. You can come back, vet. But it wasn't a place for me. I realized that I was called someplace else. So when I came, I actually was a temp for Dr. Nathan Davis in the jazz department. And so I love hip-hop. That's what I'm a hip-hop head. Don't like jazz at that point. And so when I got paired with him for my temp job, he sat me down and he was like, okay, you got to listen to some of my pieces. You got to tell me what you think. And I remember telling him, like, I don't understand any of this. Like, this stuff is, like, not my style. He's like, what do you like? I'm like, I love hip-hop. So he would play jazz for me. I would play my hip-hop for him. And he told me, like, what you do, Yvette, is your love song. So keep finding your love song here at the University of Pittsburgh. And so I transitioned to Pitt Excel. I found my passion there, saw the opportunity come up. He gave me his blessing. He was like, you could stay here. We could do this music thing, or you could go over there where it's your real passion working with students at a different level. So I left and went to Pitt Excel, and I never looked back. So I came here with a loss of love, but I gained more love than what I expected.
Okay. And so talk to me about how long you've been at the university. And as you talked about coming here and specifically making your passion, your music, your love, talk to me about that journey and how long you've been here.
Absolutely. I've been here 17 years. I came here in 2006. I would say my work is music, and so by nature, I freestyle a lot. So I'm a person who does a lot of music in my free time. All my students know my ringtone used to be all my music. So I was like, if somebody finds me, I make it big, y'all. I'm going to have to go and do my little hip-hop thing and come back maybe. And so when I started here 17 years ago, it was really to institute the program to make sure the students that were marginalized were supported in the field of engineering. The program had existed underneath of Dr. Carl Lewis, and then Dr. Carl Lewis retired. We had to change some things with diversity. So when I came in, it was like a whole blank slate to start over with Pitt Excel. And so I was in charge of academic counseling and programming. So how do you get students to come in? They didn't really have trust because there was really not a program there at that point. And then how do you have programs that fit the students' needs? That was my task. And so I use actually a lot of music to help with my workshops, to help bring them in my office. I'm using playing music. So they got to know me through my love of music, but they also got to know me through my love of nurturing students at their core.
Absolutely. So you talk about the importance of nurturing students and building relationships. Yeah. Talk to me about some of the ways that you're able to establish those relationships. A big part of what we do in terms of creating an environment that promotes equity and inclusion is about connection. Yeah. Talk to me about how you build that relationship and connection with people.
Absolutely. So it's a full family focus. So I always say my students are who they are because of their families, because of the parents that they have, because of the life that they experienced, the experiences that they had. So when I bring a scholar in, I'm also talking to the family. So for me, it's a holistic view. If I can educate the family, I'm able to educate that scholar. And so when we get scholars, it's really just the recruitment effort of going into the community. It's also when their students are recruited here, making sure that when they get here, they know, like, okay, this is a home for you. Why is this a home? How can you do engineering? Everyone says engineering is hard. You're already going to hear that. But where do you fit into the narrative of engineering? That's the beauty of it. It is making sure that I have sometimes late-night phone calls, sometimes late-night meetings, traveling to where the scholars are, making sure that I'm supporting them in every way. And so I say a lot of my job is not the retention of numbers. It's the retention of environment. And a lot of times people don't understand that. Like, if I can get the environment right, I can make sure that that scholar can succeed. If the environment's not right, they're not going to succeed. The numbers will come, but the environment is most important. And so I do that in a lot of ways. I make sure I give back to the community because I believe that those are where our engineers are. Those are where our scholars are. And so you'll see me a lot. I always say college students are my niche. I have no biological kids. And so I say I have a lot of kids that I've helped raise. But the little babies, they're growing on me. So like when I go into community, I want to see those little fifth graders, the little fourth graders, like, what do you want to do? What do you want to be? And to be my natural self. I always say that to the scholars, like this Instagram filter stuff, all the stuff that they do to change things, to make it look perfect. Sometimes you just have to have a crooked smile and be okay with just being imperfect.
Yeah, that's powerful. You talk about us finding ourselves in place and in community. Talk to me about the ways in which you came to Pittsburgh and found community. Part of our relationship as a university is to understand that we're part of an extended community.
Absolutely.
Talk to me about what that journey was like for you.
Absolutely. So when I came here, I was actually, my father-in-law worked at Pitt over in the public health building, and he worked in maintenance over there, and he worked here for 52 years.
Wow.
And so when he was here, he kind of was like, okay, Vet, this is how Pitt works. These are people probably who you should talk to, get an understanding. Ms. Cheryl Ruffin, who also is my sorority sister, she brought me in, and so she was kind of like, okay, I already knew who she was from my college days because she's one of our charter members. And so it's like, okay, having another mother figure to say, okay, this is who we are here. Also, this is how I can nurture you because she understood where I came from. She understood when I came here with grief. So I was working in like a dual role of like, I would go to work and during my lunch breaks, I would cry. And I would go to work and I would cry. And the things that would help me feel some of that sadness was seeing those students succeed. I also made sure that I found like Mr. Vernon Franklin, who has retired. He was a big person that really helped me over in tech. He was a person who just really gave himself and was just a natural to like, okay, these are your passions. How do you get involved here at Pitt? And so I gained a whole family, Tawanda Taylor. I just gained people who were just, I latched onto and I was able to find what I was looking for. Not just professionally, but as a woman, as a black woman, as a woman dealing in diversity, it was full force. So I was just blessed enough that I had a family around me, even when I didn't think I had a family at times.
Sure. So you talked a little bit about some of those people who have made a difference and what that's meant for you. I would say in traveling around the university and having exposure to folks who are connected with engineering, they would list you as being one of those people.
Yeah.
So I think it's powerful that you talk about that connection and having that legacy. I guess a follow-up question. With regard to your story, I've heard you tell it before. Talk to me about loss and specifically that experience losing your husband.
Yeah, so that was an experience that I always say shaped Yvette to who she is today. I became a widow at 27. And by the time my husband was a pastor in the African Methodist Episcopal Church, so we traveled a lot. So we were coming from actually Queens, New York. That's where we were at when he passed away. And so his last funeral when we finally laid him to rest was actually on my birthday. So I turned 28 and I remember sitting there after everything was over and I just was thinking like, how am I going to push through life? But I was raised by a strong woman who taught me a lot about even though days may be dark, there's still light. And so I held on to that. So everyone around me, I think my family thought like, oh, goodness, Vet is just moving, but Vet probably should sit still. But I was like, no, look, I'm not sitting still. One, I know that's not my calling. And then two, I know my husband wouldn't want me to do that. And so that's when I stayed in Pittsburgh. I started working like a couple weeks after. It was a chance for me to figure out like who I was at that point. Like it reshaped my thinking about what was important to me at that point. It let me learn in life that you can be free, even when you feel like you're in bondage of sadness. It also taught me that you got to push for love more. And so I think a lot of times when my scholars see me, they're always like, Ms. Moore, like you're so happy, or like you're bouncing around, or you don't lose energy. How do you do it? It's because I understand the other side of that. I understand the other side of when you don't want to get out of bed. I understand the other side when life doesn't look like what you thought it would be. I understand the other side of like when you're just sitting there. So for me, it's like if I can keep moving, I know I'm living.
As you think about that and you talk about the importance of keeping moving, certainly in the midst of the semester, there are challenges at times for our students where they won't want to keep moving or that there are ups and downs in their struggles. Talk to me about some of the ways that you motivate them.
Yeah. So if you talk to the scholars, they'll say, the young ones will say, they're scared of me. They'll say when they come to the office, they're like, oh, goodness, like, here she goes. So they'll go to Lisa's office, Lisa Huff, my colleague, because Lisa's younger. Lisa gives them a little different type of love than I do. When they come to my office, they already know. Like, if they're wrong, they're going to get it. And one of the scholars said to me last week, he said, Ms. Moore, when we come to your office, we're going to get the truth, and sometimes we're not ready for the truth. But the way I do it is they've taught me patience over the years because I'm a person who is very much so, like, if you can see it, you can get it. And I think a lot of times that the babies, they don't always think that way. They want to take all of these steps, and sometimes it's just one, two, and three. Sometimes the journey is right there in front of you, and it's been laid out, and you want to, you know, kind of like go your own way, pivot, and that's fine, but you got to come back. And so a lot of it is sitting down and talking about what are your fears? Why did you come here? What is your passion? Who invested in you? You know, it's not just you here. Like, college years can be a very isolating time. You're still growing. Your brain is still developing. Let's push the narrative on that. Other times, it's being able to go and have dinner with them, have lunch with them, you know, sit down and walk around campus. A lot of times, you will see me walking around campus, and I'm usually with scholars, because getting outside of Benenum, getting outside of engineering and seeing the campus, like, that sometimes clears your mind for what you're supposed to be doing, not just here, but in life. And so a lot of it is just making sure that they are here and they are supported in those ways.
Very good. You're listening to The Inclusion Interchange. I'm your host, Clyde Wilson-Pickett, and we're talking to Yvette Moore of Pitt's Swanson School of Engineering about support for diversity, equity, and inclusion, and students in STEM professions. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back with our guest shortly.
For more information about the Office for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion, visit our website at diversity.pitt.edu or find us on social media at Pitt Diversity.
Welcome back to the Inclusion Interchange. We're talking about supporting students' careers in engineering, and with us is Yvette Moore. We kicked off the segment and we talked about your love for music. So let's talk a bit about hip hop. We are observing the 50-year anniversary of hip hop. Talk to me about what hip hop has meant for you in your life, and specifically, give me some artists who are in heavy rotation for you.
Yes, okay. So when I think about hip hop, all of my life, when I say all of it, I mean since I was young. I was raised in a single household where before my parents had divorced, it was very violent. And so, you know, dad, alcoholism, drug addiction, and music was my escape. And so I used music as a place which was healing. And I really never realized that until I got older. But I listened to everything. I listened to hip hop. I listened to country. I listened to gospel. Everything. It really helped me through. And so as I got older, it was just like hip hop was just that thing for me because it was really talking about my life. Like, most of my aunts passed away of addictions, you know, whether it be drug addiction or alcohol addiction. It was a space where I lived that life. I was from the city. I understood that life. And so Queen Latifah, you know, when she talked about ladies first, you know, it was like, okay, like, you know, all hail the queen. Talking about that self-esteem, just of who I was when I was younger, where, you know, sometimes I couldn't get that at home all the time. Sometimes I didn't see that around me. It was that space, you know. When I think about listening to, like, Biggie and, you know, him talking about just everything he went through from, you know, I love it when they call me Big Papa, you know, to give me one more chance. Like, all of these spaces was like, okay, this is, like, some of the life that I'm living, and I understand how this life looks. But I also understand that there's a bigger calling on my life, you know. So I listen to everything hip-hop, Das FX. Like, I like everything. I'm East Coast, so I'm always going to stay the East Coast in that realm. But it was a space where I would sit in my room and I would just rhyme. I would just write, and I had books of rhymes. And it was just like things. And my sisters got so sick of me because, you know, music was blasting, you know, noise all over the house, you know. And the great thing about it, my mom's a free spirit, so she let me be. You know, she let me just be who I was in that. And so it was a space where when I look at hip hop in my life, like, it's something that I listen to all day. I'm seeing Burna Boy in March. I'm going to Boston to see Burna Boy. Some of the students were like, Ms. Moore, you want to go see Drake and J. Cole? Absolutely. I'm going to go see Drake and J. Cole with them. It's those things of, like, there's some goodness in this younger generation, and I want to stay tapped into that, too, because I want to know what they're talking about. Some of the stuff that they're learning and they're dealing with wasn't what I dealt with, but it's still relevant. So I look at hip hop as keeping me humble in a lot of senses. And I look at when I do rap as a space where I can just be free.
I appreciate you sharing that. I think you touch on something that's critical for us as we think about the shift in music, the shift in culture, and specifically the shift in hip-hop. We have a tendency to focus on the differences as opposed to the similarities. Talk to me about some of the ways you've been able to make the connection in building and focusing attention on newer hip-hop and the ways in which that can connect us with our scholars, our students.
Yeah, I mean, you look at some of the newer artists out who are pretty young but still seasoned. Like, you look at, like, a J. Cole, or you look at a Kendrick Lamar. You look at a Lil Baby. You look at a Gunna. Like, all of these artists are talking about the things that they really deal with when you talk about mental health. That is stuff that our students are dealing with. When you talk about not feeling like you belong, that's what they're dealing with. When they talk about feeling like, you know, you're trying to do your best and your best is not good enough, that's what they deal with. And so when I look at and I listen to the younger artists, it's kind of like, okay, I'm seeing this in my office. Like, I'm seeing this in my office. I'm seeing when you talk about what does Dirk talk about when he's talking about, I'm trying to stay healthy right now, all my life. You know, when he's talking about all my life, he's talking about things that, like, people didn't think he was going to be here another day. But all his life, this is what he's been doing to try to just be well. And I think about that with the scholars, that sometimes they don't want to show really who they are, but they can show it without even talking sometimes. It's kind of helping them see that, yeah, you have these things going on, but there are spaces in that where there's power. And how can we tap into that power? Because what makes a great engineer is you tapping into your power, not just you tapping into calculus. You can learn calculus, but can you understand what your power is within all of that?
Sure. You highlight something that I think is important for us. As we're looking at our interactions with students, potential students, scholars, part of this conversation is the way in which we focus on building their confidence, making connection, and promoting programs like STEM and engineering. What are the recommendations you would have for community members and educators in terms of building that confidence early in potential scholars to get them to see STEM education and specifically engineering as a viable career option for our students and scholars?
Yeah. Our ancestors were engineers. When you look at what has already been built, that is engineering. You know, when I look at what the scholars do just in their everyday, when they figure something out just in their everyday life, I'm like, you realize that's engineering. That doesn't have to just happen in a lab. And so when I talk to community members, it's showing them that this engineering thing isn't an isolated thing to the university walls. It isn't an ivory tower thing. The way that you were able to raise your family is engineering. You had to engineer some things to be successful for them to be successful. And so I talk about not being scared of math. A lot of times we're seeing that as a deficit right now, especially in our community. When you look at students that are marginalized, math is something that's being taken out of schools, or math is something that we're scared of. You know, we're scared of numbers for some reason. But when you look at the scholars and their parents, like, they're really good with numbers, and they don't realize, like, all of this still connects, right? They're scared of science, like, scared of physics, scared of chemistry. But we understood what chemistry and physics looked like before it was even titled chemistry and physics. And so it's really talking to them about, can you see the physics in everyday life? Can you see the calculus in everyday life? And what does that mean? It's also breaking down the barriers of, like, what does this look like? Right. And so the scholars know, like, I'm big on giving back. Like, you, if you're here, you need to be out there making sure someone else is here. Like, you can't just sit here and think that that's your only job, is to be sitting in these classrooms, because if you're going to change the world, you have to understand what you're changing. So a lot of it is having the scholars talk to the younger generation and telling them, like, this is what it's like. This is what I've experienced. This is what I'm going through. This is the goodness of it. This is the things that are hard. But how can we make it through? And so I try to make myself available at all times to make sure that it's not something that people are sitting above and looking down, but it's something that you understand that, like, this is in our ancestral lifeline. This is our bloodline. We've been doing this for years.
So I want to talk a bit about legacy, specifically about PitXL. For those who are listening who may not be familiar with PitXL, please share some information. What would you like the community to know about PitXL?
Absolutely. So PitXL started as the Impact Program in 1969 underneath of the tenure of Dr. Carl Lewis. Dr. Lewis was phenomenal. He did not play. He made sure, as a civil engineer, that he gained industry funds and made sure that his students were supported. I got to talk to him, meet with him. He always used to come in and scare me all the time. Like, are you dealing with these students right? What's going on with these students, Yvette? Like, oh, my goodness, he's coming in. But he was a person that was committed to making sure that they had the best. And so when I came on, it was kind of like, okay, we have this legacy. Like, let's go. So we're actually the oldest minority engineering program in the country. So when you look at other schools, they're model their programs after us. A lot of programs started in 79 or 84. We were already here in existence. It's a place where if you talk to the alumni and you talk to the students, they'll call it home. So it's a space where it's home. We're committed to academic success. We're committed to recruiting, retaining, and graduating those scholars in the field of engineering. But it goes post-graduation, right? And so we have an alumni council that's very active. They come back. They do many conferences for the students. They come back. They buy laptops. They come back. They pay for books. They come back. They come and eat lunch with the scholars. They're committed because for them, it's a family thing. So they're always just like when they come back, you know, they're like, okay, where's the family at? Like they know they can come to my office. They can go down to the lounge. The family's there. So when we talk about Pitt Excel and when people ask me about it, I always say it's a family. It's a family that's committed to excellence, but it's also a family that's going to be there in every aspect of your life. If you don't have any place to go home for break, we make sure you have some place to go. If you don't have a meal, we make sure you get a meal. All of those things are Pitt Excel.
Very good. You're listening to The Inclusion Interchange. I'm your host, Clyde Pickett. We're speaking with Yvette Moore. We'll take a break and come back right after this.
If you have a question or comment, we hope you'll write to us. Our email address is diversity@pitt.edu.
We're back. You're listening to The Inclusion Interchange with Yvette Moore from Pitt's Swanson School of Engineering. And so we talked a bit about legacy and where we've been. Much has been made about the most recent Supreme Court decision and issues with regard to racial preference. Talk to me about what the impact has been on you so far. But more importantly, talk to me about the future, where you see programs like Pitt Excel going, and specifically our efforts to attract, retain, and ultimately help be successful our Black, African-American, and other students of color in engineering.
Absolutely. So what it looks like for us is obviously the recruitment efforts have changed from higher up recruitment. For our level of recruitment, it has actually boasted some different ideals and some newness in how we recruit. And so we have a very supportive senior associate dean of engineering, Dr. Mary Bistefel-Sakri, who is my supervisor, but she's also someone who has mentored me. And she's an IE, industrial engineer by trade. And so she deals with optimizing everything. So she's like, okay, let's sit down. How do we optimize this now, right? How do we do this? And so I always want to give Mary a shout out because she has been a great advocate and ally for this mission. But our alumni are great. So what we decided is, okay, we're going into community all over in the different hubs that we know that we're at. So we have alumni in the Texas, Houston area. We have alumni in the Atlanta area. We have alumni in the New York, Jersey, Philly area. We have alumni in these different hubs. Okay, they're going to host their own recruitment efforts. So they're going to go into the community, go into nonprofits. A lot of them are members of the National Society, so National Society of Black Engineers, Society of Hispanic Professional Engineers, and they're going to go talk about Swanson School of Engineering, Pitt Excel. What does that mean? We're obviously going to be going into those areas that are local. I'm also going to go back to Philadelphia, talk to some of the STEM schools, making sure that we're out there. For me, the future looks like, Clyde, that the narrative doesn't stop for what we do. So it just gives me more energy to say, okay, how can I create a new love song? Because for me, this is all a love song. Like, whatever we do here is in love, and whatever we do here I know has changed lives. And so, and it hasn't been just Yvette doing it. It's we. It's been the family. And so for me, it's like, okay, let's push the narrative now. Like, let's go after what we know we need, because we know we need this. And we've known what we needed all along anyway. We've been going after this. And so I think our recruitment efforts are going to look very different, but I think they're going to be refreshing because it allows our alumni to be boots to ground to talk about what they experienced, how they got there, and to help out. Also, we're going to start kind of like we have a Pink Panther program within Swanson, which is for the women. They come in and they do like overnights. They do like trips around the building. They look at labs. We're going to do something like that for Pitt Excel to really gain more of those high school minds to come in. There's a lot of students that are in Pittsburgh that have never stepped their feet in Benenum. They don't understand what goes on in these labs. There's a lot of cool things that go on in these labs that they would be interested in. And so doing a program like that within Pitt Excel and kind of changing the narrative. So I think it allows us to be more hands-on, but it also allows us to kind of change what we see as the narrative for engineering. Like, engineering has changed over the years, so let's change how we present it. Like, we're presenting it now, so, you know, you might never say, I saw an engineer of color. Oh, no, you saw an engineer of color.
So talk to me a bit about some of the ways in which our community members, meaning members of the Pitt community, those folks who are listeners and supporters, how they can help with that effort too.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're always looking for people to come and do workshops. We're always looking for community service activities to share along with people. The big thing that I'm pushing for in the spring is community service with the scholars. I really want them to put their hands on the community. I think that that will only bless the community, it'll bless them as well. And so I think that's important. Also, coming over the Benenum, coming just to come and support the efforts. I think it's beautiful for the scholars to see people from all over doing different things and to see how all of that connects. It all connects. You're just not an engineer. You're a person. How does that connect? And so what we're trying to do, especially for the spring, is reach out to different departments to make sure we give them a holistic view of what they need, right? We talk about how do you have a healthy relationship? Like, you're just not here as an engineer. Like, you will have a relationship. How does that work? How do you deal with finances? You need to understand how do you deal with finances, right? What does work-life balance mean? That's important for you to learn that now, because you'll go out into the world, you'll have to learn it there. You know, what does it mean when times get hard? How do you not even bounce back, but sometimes how do you just pivot? How do you just pivot? Or how do you just stop? You know, how do you stop to gather yourself? And so any way that anyone would want to give back to make sure the scholars are supported, it's always welcome, because I watch them attach themselves to people and learn different things. And that is what life is about. I always tell them, if you just stay with people who are just like you, you will live a very dry life. And so you need to get out there and do it.
Absolutely. The importance of putting yourself out of your comfort zone. And so, you know, as we're working to conclude our time together, just a couple of things. You didn't get a chance to shout out your sorority, so I want to make sure that you do that.
Yes, yes.
So I'll let you do that.
Okay, thank you. You know, hello, Sorors of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated. Love them. I've been a member of Delta Sigma Theta since fall 1999. And so that is my love. My fifth grade teacher was a Delta. And so she saw greatness in me in fifth grade. Fifth grade, I did not talk a lot. I was very quiet. I was a very shy kid. I'm still actually very shy. People don't know that about me. But she just saw it in me. So she took me to everything Delta, every community service, everything. And she said, you know, you'll be a Delta one day. And I didn't know what she meant. I was like, okay. And then when I got to Shippensburg University, Diane Jefferson, who's another soror, she was a Delta. And she's like, oh, you know you're going to be a Delta. And I was like, oh, I was already made like this when I was 10. So this is just a natural progression. So Delta Sigma Theta has always been my first love.
Very good. Well, I wanted to make sure we got a chance to give you that time. And you mentioned your love for hip-hop.
Yes.
You want to share a line? Share some bars?
Glad I didn't even go do that. You know, I'm not quite ready yet because I don't even have my little background music, but I will hit y'all with something. I actually am creating a Pit Excel song, like a rap for Pit Excel. So that's my thing I've been working on with the students. They've been giving me the beats to work on with on the rap. So you'll see that in the future when it comes out from Pit Excel for the spring, and then I'll share it with y'all. But you know, I'm working on some new stuff.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So something to look forward to.
Something to look forward to.
Well, on behalf of the entire University of Pittsburgh community, and certainly everyone affiliated with Pitt Excel and the School of Engineering, just appreciation. Appreciation for you. Appreciation for all
thank
that you.
You
do. On behalf of our entire community, thank you. You are a tremendous difference maker, and you make our community much better because of everything that you do, your passion. So we wanted to provide an opportunity for you to tell your story,
share
with the community. And so thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. It was a blessing.
This is our time to end. I'd like to thank our guest, Yvette Moore, the director of Pitt Excel and the Swanson School of Engineering, for spending some time with us. Of course, you can find out more information about the Swanson School of Engineering by going to engineering.pitt.edu/excel. And we will see you back the next time here on the Inclusion Interchange. Take care and be well.
You've been listening to The Inclusion Interchange, a podcast from the University of Pittsburgh's Office for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. Technical support for this podcast is provided by the Center for Teaching and Learning. For more information about the Office for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion, visit our website at diversity.pitt.edu or find us on social media at Pitt Diversity. The Inclusion Interchange is produced by Jay Toger for OEDI.